Conference record has joined the conference.
Okay, can you hear me? Deb?
I can hear you.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, well, we'll start this. Tonight's topical call is on the autism waiver, and we are having Deb Baltzan from the Department of Human Services talk about it to us tonight, okay? So, Deb, you can start whenever you like.
Okay. I'm going to start by reviewing just some basics about the waiver and then get into some of the things for families to consider in determining if this waiver is appropriate for them, and end up with talking how to get started if family is interested in exploring that waiver. To start with, last legislative session, the Department of Human Services received funding and was charged to develop a waiver and submit that to the Center for Medicaid and Medicaid Services, CMS. We did that, and we have received approval on that waiver. It is a waiver to serve up to 30 children per year. That means from this November through next October, we can serve 30 children. It's not 30 children at any one time. So if a child were to be found eligible and start services this month, but the family moved out of state or the child may have aged out of the waiver, no one else could use that one spot until next November 1st. So it's 30 children, that's statewide, and it's for children that are birth to 4 years of age or up to the day before their fifth birthday. They must also have a diagnosis on the autism spectrum. It's not just for children with autism. It's for children with PDD, NOS, Asperger's, any child that's on the spectrum. And that is according to the current DSM, the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual. Also, to receive this waiver service, the family must apply for Medicaid. But because this is a waiver, the family's income will not be considered, nor were their assets. To continue to receive the waiver services, the child must need one of the waiver services, and the waiver service must be delivered at least monthly. We may have some children that are in for a while, some things are set up, but then they're not going to be needing that waiver service monthly. We would have to notify the county that the family is no longer receiving the waiver service, and then their Medicaid would be rebudgeted because there's no waiver, so the income would need to be considered. I'd also like to back up and just clarify a bit on the number of children. When I said there were 30, and in waiver language, they're referred to as 30 slots. Not my favorite term to use there, but it is kind of shorthand with the feds on, in waivers, how many individuals can be served. If a child is eligible now, and let's say receive services through next May, and for some reason did not receive services over the summer, let's say June, July, and August, and the family was gone someplace, and they came back. If they come back before the end of October, they would go back into that waiver slot. So it's saved for them for that whole year if they do come back. And if you are in a waiver slot at the end of October, that automatically carries over. You don't have to requalify. For those individuals that do meet the eligibility criteria, all of those criteria, but there are no waiver slots available, we will then create a waiting list. And then next November 1st, for the slots that have been vacated during this first year, they would become available, and we would then go to the waiting list for other children to start receiving this service. We are not dividing the slots up so many per region. It's just 30 statewide. And we are not rating the children or family in any way. Having a diagnosis of autism doesn't give any more points to get into the waiver as a diagnosis of Asperger's. So it really is a first come when we look at those waiver slots. Any questions regarding the who, basically, how many, the eligibility criteria, diagnosis or agents? Well, questions may come up. I'll start talking a bit then about the services that are available through the waiver. There are two services that are tied into this waiver, but we're not claiming reimbursement through the waiver. We're claiming it through what's called admin, and that's a 50-50 match between federal and state funds. One of those services will be DD program management, and that's through the regional human service centers. The other service is the evaluation and diagnostic team. Now, you may hear me slip and use an acronym and refer to it as the EDT. The Department of Human Services, following procurement policy, published a request for proposals. We received one proposal. We reviewed that, and it did meet all of our requirements. So we have now entered into a contract with the North Dakota Center for Persons with Disabilities, through Minot State. They are going to be coordinating the evaluation and diagnosis of all children receiving service this waiver. They had to assure us that they would have a menu of specific professionals available. Not all of them are through the North Dakota Center for Persons with Disabilities. They come from other areas in the state. They had to assure that there would be social workers, early childhood special educators, occupational therapists, speech-language pathologists, behavior consultants, a pediatrician, psychiatrist, psychologist, that we had to have a variety of those individuals available to do evaluations. We are requiring that all evaluations have at least two different disciplines physically on site to do the evaluation, and that needs to be in the child's familiar surroundings. So it's not a clinic that the children will come into or that the parents will have to travel to. The evaluation team will come to the family's home. Maybe the family wants them in the child care setting, but it's got to be someplace that's natural and familiar for that child. I mentioned at least two. Those are the two that have to be there in person. There may be others that are part of that team on video. And the two that are there in person, that is selected by the Developmental Disabilities Program Manager and the family. An example might be if a child has a lot of sensory issues, maybe the family would want to select an occupational therapist to be one of those team members. Or if communication was a major concern, it may be that speech-language pathologist would be one of those professionals. So they'll look at that menu and then select those professionals to be part of that team. Regardless of who is selected to be there on site, either a pediatrician or a psychiatrist also going to be involved, and there may be other professionals involved too from other disciplines. But for every evaluation, there's going to be at least a pediatrician or a psychiatrist that's reviewing the information, reviewing videos, and actually making the diagnosis based on the recommendations of the team. I said earlier, all children would have that evaluation, and that is regardless of what recent evaluations the child may have had. We were not going to try to come up with a process of saying, well, if an evaluation came from this agency or this clinic or this provider, then we'd accept that. But some of the other diagnoses, we weren't going to accept them. So it does mean if a child may have just had an evaluation through the GPAS, GPIC, or they've just been their psychologist, a physician and they've received the diagnosis, they would still get a diagnosis through this evaluation and diagnostic team. That may seem a little redundant, but it will give us a picture, too, of how that child may have changed since that initial evaluation and diagnosis, and it will also give us a picture of that child in their natural environment. Very few of those other evaluations are done in that child's home. But we must go through it. That diagnosis must be given. The child does not have a diagnosis. It's suspected. He must come out of that EDT with a diagnosis on the spectrum or be confirming a diagnosis on the spectrum in order for eligibility for this waiver to proceed. So if the child is eligible, we would then go on and be looking at the four services that are available through this waiver. Two of the services are very similar to what we currently have in some of our self-directed waivers, and they will be self-directed, meaning that a budget will be developed with the family for allowable and appropriate items. Then the fiscal agent will pay the vendor, so the family's not going to have that cash flow issue. The vendor will be paid directly by the fiscal agent. This time, our fiscal agent is Acumen. The two vendor services would be environmental modifications. Examples of that could be alarm systems. It might be a fence for health and safety issues. It could be safety glass. Not every family, of course, is going need those environmental modifications, but we wanted that available. There is a dollar limit. This is not an entitlement that everybody on the waiver gets up to that amount, but there is a limit, and that is $5,200 per state fiscal year. So that's from July through June. That's the maximum that could be paid to a vendor on behalf of the family for environmental modifications. The other vendor service through this waiver is equipment and supplies. That, too, is a vendor service paid by the fiscal agent, and it also has that limit of $5,200 per state fiscal year. Examples of equipment and supplies could be communication devices, materials for a schedule board. Those are some of the things that could be used for equipment and supplies and paid to a vendor. Environmental modifications and equipment and supplies, it must be a need that's related to the child's qualifying diagnosis. It must be in excess of what any family would be expected to provide their child. And it must also not be available through other sources, so we can't cover things that would be available through the state Medicaid plan. Remember, if the child is eligible for this waiver, they will be eligible. They'll have a Medicaid card, and there will be no recipient liability, as long as the child does not have an income. Those are two of the self-directed services in the waiver. The third self-directed service, in-home support. This is where the family would be hiring direct contact staff to come into the home and assist the family in providing structure for the child. There is a limit of 150 hours per month on average over a quarter. So we know it may be higher, let's say during December when there's school breaks, or maybe over the summer, but it cannot go more than an average of 150 hours per quarter. This, again, it has to be based on the need for that specially trained caregiver, and we have to be looking at structure. We cannot be using in-home support for children that are 3 or 4 years of age for the times that they are eligible to be in preschool special ed. The family, I said, would be hiring These individuals will need to go through a background check. The fiscal agent will take care of the employer responsibility for the family on their behalf. They will be cutting the paycheck, doing the withholding, the reporting of federal requirements. That will be done by the fiscal agent for the family. But the family needs to hire. They need to schedule. They need to send the time card in to the fiscal agent in order for their staff to then be paid. Okay. The other service available through the waiver, the fourth waiver service, is called intervention coordination. That is not self-directed. That will be through a licensed infant development provider. Even though this waiver will serve children that are 3 and 4 years of age, and infant development programs typically serve just up to 3 years of age, our providers will be that infant development staff pool. The intervention coordinator will be working directly with the family, going to the family's home, or they may be going to the child care setting. And they are there to be a coach with the family to figure out, okay, how do we make this routine work? How do we provide the structure for this child? How do we have consistency with what's going on in school versus home versus the child care center? They are also the individuals that are responsible for coordinating that individual plan for that child. We will be calling that an individual family support plan. Now, we're expecting there may be some confusion, and we're trying to clarify that right up front. Children that are 3 or 4 years of age will still have an IEP, an individual education plan, through the school. The IFSP will be coordinating these waiver services and talking about how we're coordinating with other services, be it the school, or maybe the family is selecting to get some additional direct therapies, either through their private insurance or the public insurance Medicaid. We will coordinate with those activities. One of the benefits of this waiver, the way I see it, is it's just a new waiver. It's a small waiver serving a very targeted population. But one of the benefits is that it's helping us as a state start to build the infrastructure so we can get more personnel trained. The reason we went with that one evaluation and diagnostic team, they have consistency, be able to provide additional training to those individuals, and then have that information in there to support those local teams. In addition to that evaluation and diagnostic team, we will be using software with the infant development programs. The software that we're going to start with is called Autism Pro. It was developed with support from Dr. Kathleen Quill. Through Canada, they wanted some software for their very frontier settings where providers may be working with a young child on the autism spectrum, and they've never worked with a child with that need before, and they may not see another child in that program with similar needs for a time. They wanted software that didn't prescribe or provide a canned program, but would be a place for those team members to go to say, here are some of the presenting issues. These are some of the concerns we have. Here are strengths of the child and other particulars. And would give them suggestions of interventions to consider. So we'll be using that. We will also have a separate contract for intervention coordinators to contact. And it could be with the family, with the rest of the IFSP team, but someone separate to contact to say, what's the research? This is what we're considering, or this is our challenge. We've tried this. What else should we consider? But what's the research? It's one of the requirements we needed to build into this waiver is that we only use research-based interventions. And we went on to further say that they must be at least promising practice level, and the research that's being considered must be based on the population that we're serving. So we can't be saying that, well, here's some research that says intervention XYZ really works, but maybe that research was done with a preteen population. We need to be looking at what's the research out there for children birth through four. So again, I've said, like, the services, that's definitely a benefit of this waiver. Developing that infrastructure is going to be a benefit of this waiver. And as with all new waivers that are starting out strong, that are starting out really small, it's going to be a mechanism for us to gauge the need. We hate to have waiting lists, but as we're starting, a waiting list can be very helpful to help say, here are the needs, these are the very specific needs of this population. It will give us more of that data for the future. Because we're very aware, like I said earlier, this is a small waiver. It's only for 30 children. It's only for children less than 5 years of age, and there are only four services within the waiver. Some of the other things that are required for this waiver is that the IFSP must be reviewed at least quarterly. We have a small window of time to work with these children. We don't want to keep doing the same thing and not getting some results. So we need to review that plan quarterly. And if the data is not showing progress, the team must modify that plan in some way. Now, we're not saying that they must have achieved the outcome. We're cautioning the teams to be very realistic and to develop criteria that is measurable and sensitive enough to capture small improvements. We are also not a intervention-specific waiver. We are not saying that the only intervention that can be used in this waiver would be pivotal response training or any of the other types of intervention out there. We're just saying it needs to be research-based. We're also saying that we believe there's not one right approach for all children, nor is there necessarily just one right approach for a child. What we've seen in the literature is that it's usually a combination. So we may have children where we're using PICs with the communication, or maybe it's an iPad with the communication. It could be a visual schedule for that child. There may be behavioral interventions, social interventions, communication interventions, a combination, looking at what works for that child. This waiver does not require that there be a specific amount of intervention. We are going from the standpoint from the research to say that there must be structure. It does not mean that that in-home support staff or the family or somebody must be doing quote-unquote programming with the child for X number of hours a week. But the goal that I'm discussing with the teams as I go around the state now is to look for at least 20 hours of structure for the child. Now, that structure may come through a preschool setting. It may be some very specific intervention, or could be just a structure that has been added to the evening meal routine or the morning routine of everybody getting out of the house and the chaos may be evolved there. We're looking at that structure and how that's set up in there, and that's really where that intervention coordinator will come in to work with the family in reviewing the routines, finding out where it's really challenging for that family to have some of that consistency and that structure, and helping the family come up with ways of working that into the family routine. Because we're not expecting the parents to be quote-unquote therapists. We're there to help them work these routines into their family's life, meet the needs of the child and the family. Other things that we're talking with families with right now that are interested in this waiver is to make sure that this is the right waiver for them. A child may be eligible for this waiver. That doesn't mean it would be the best fit for the family. Yes, in this waiver, the staff will have more resources, more training than if they remained in our traditional waiver or other self-directed support waiver. But there are services not available. The family is currently getting reimbursement for transportation or a behavior consultant is being paid as a vendor through either of the waivers. Those options are not available within the autism waiver. Also, for in-home support, that must be self-directed by the family. It's not an agency that's responsible for that. But families will still have the option to do this co-employment, so they may go to a licensed family support service provider. I'm looking for in-home support staff. Do you have staff that I could basically hire? In that situation, that licensed DD provider would not be coordinating or responsible for training for the staff. They would just be like an employment agency, and the fiscal agent would pay that agency as a vendor instead of paying that in-home support staff directly through their time card. This waiver also has fairly short end in sight for children in this waiver. The services of this waiver would be terminated the day before their fifth birthday, and they will need to go through eligibility redetermination again at that point. We're asking that it be done by the time the child is 4 years, 9 months of age, so the family's aware and has some planning and transition time. But a family may want to consider if they're currently within the traditional waiver and the child is eligible, say the child is 3 and eligible, do they want to go to the self-directed waiver and then count on a waiver slot being available to move back to the traditional waiver when the child turns 5? Those are all discussions that program managers need to have with the family. It's not that we're trying to talk families out of this waiver, but we want it to be an informed choice when they're looking at the different waiver options. To start with, for families that are interested, if they're currently eligible for DD program management, they need to contact their program manager. If they are not currently eligible, they need to contact that local human service center, the developmental disabilities unit there, and request eligibility determination for this waiver. A DD program manager will then be assigned, be it that program manager for the children that are eligible or for the children just going through the eligibility, that program manager will work with the family, complete a short parent questionnaire screening tool, such as the NCHAP. Some of you may be familiar with that. They'll also work with the family in completing an application for the evaluation. That just provides some of the background information so that evaluation team is not coming out there cold. They will be having a call with that evaluation team, family, and the program manager prior to the on-site evaluation to clarify issues and really help design that evaluation so it's the most effective for that child. The program manager will also be working with the family, as I said before, in selecting the different disciplines to be involved with that evaluation. We're asking families either they have a video camera. If they don't, the program manager will be lending them one. Have the family take short video clips of their child involved in different routines so that can be viewed by that evaluation team also. Well, sometimes the behavior that a family's trying to explain and say, these are the challenges, here's how it happens, that may not happen when the evaluation team is there. So we are asking the family to get any of that information that we'd like viewed. The program manager will also work with the family to complete release of information requests, to release information regarding the child, let's say if they're in infant development, some of those evaluations or IFSPs, or any other past evaluations or reports that the family wants to share with that evaluation team. The contract between the Department of Human Services and the North Dakota Center for Persons with Disabilities for the evaluations, in there we are asking that once that referral packet is complete, and we're not saying that one of the pieces of paper were sent in, but once all of that packet has been completed, we are then asking for a completed evaluation report back in 30 days. That's going to be a little tough right now if we have 30 children going through that evaluation period at basically the same time. But that's the target that we are shooting for evaluations to be completed. We don't want that eligibility process to linger. So I've talked about the requirements for eligibility, the age group, the number of children, the services available in the waiver, and the services that will be available through admin reimbursement. And that includes the fiscal agent, the evaluation, diagnostic, and DD program management. No, I should ask, we keep talking about evaluation and diagnostic, but that same evaluation team will do annual assessments also. We purchase those assessments just like we will the evaluations as a fee for service. So there will be those annual evaluations. That's something we need to start looking at, is these children, the ones that are under three, as they are transitioning, how that ties into that transition process. Earlier this week, I was holding an evening meeting in one of the regions, and we had special ed director there, some preschool coordinators, and they were very interested and hopeful that by having that type of evaluation and assessment reports and the IFSPs and the data, that may streamline that transition process a bit for the families when the child turns three, realizing that these services will continue for at least for 2 years there. So we're kind of staying with the child and the family as they go into the education system. We've talked about some of the other requirements, such as the quarterly reviews. We will also be having one of the evaluation team members that the family and program manager selected. The team will then select one of those disciplines to have a monthly conference call with that intervention coordinator to see what issues that the team, the family may have. And they will also be part of reviewing that data on a quarterly basis to assure that there has been progress, that there is appropriate data to measure progress. Then we ended up talking a bit about how do you start. That's kind of the basic, the overview of the waiver. I take any questions now. I know this is a complicated process for families. They're going to be dealing with an application at the Human Service Center if they're not currently receiving services there. We'd be going through eligibility, this whole evaluation process, developing the initial IFSP, applying and getting things set up with the fiscal agent to reimburse vendors or employees. We're trying not to make it too scary and to take it just piece by piece to work with the family through those packets. What are the questions?
Deb, I have a question. This is Missy. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can, Missy.
I'm traveling, so I apologize, but I have a question. If a child is in early intervention that has an IFSP, so then I presume it's during the transition process that would be talked about if they would be interested in an autism waiver and go through that evaluation. What I'm wondering is, if the IFSP, would it need to be redone at three even if it wasn't due? Like if it, you know, let's say the IFSP, the annual IFSP has just been done at 2 years, 6 months. Would they be rewriting the IFSP at that point at three still?
Well, we would, because we're going to have a new player. We're going to want to be coordinating
okay.
with what's going on IEP. So it may not be a totally new ISSP, but it would be a review at that time.
Okay, and it, so more of a review.
We may not wait until transition. A child could be 18 months of age or 22 months of age.
True.
Family may choose to move from infant development through the traditional waiver to the autism waiver at that point. They don't need to wait till that transition time at 3 to make that choice to move to the different waiver.
All right. But if they decided at 18 months or 2, then they would still have that evaluation team from NDCPD.
That's correct. Any child that will be getting services through the waiver needs to go through that evaluation team.
Okay. And then my other question was, we were talking about research-based interventions. Who, like, if a family comes up, you know, finds out something or has a suggestion or, you know, an idea, who makes the decision if it's research-based? Is it, like, the program manager and the family together, or is there going to be a, you know, a someone else? You know, do you look at that, or who makes that decision on if it's?
Sometimes I may get involved with that, but really that's why we're looking at having that separate contract for someone that's outside of that team, outside the Department of Human Services, but very involved and aware of the research for that population. We will be looking at the practice standards that came out, I don't know, was that about a year ago? Dealing with the autism spectrum, we'll also be looking at currently and what may be added to the Office of Special Ed program through the Department of Ed, their What Works Clearinghouse.
Okay.
We're going to be looking at promising practices or better.
Okay. And then my last question, are the same requirements of the ISSP, are the requirements the same after they, like if they move to the autism waiver at age 2 or 3 or whatever age it is, and that it's, are the requirements the same on the ISSP?
For children that are less than 3, yes, the requirements would be the same because they are still entitled to the protections through the Part C of the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act. But then once the child turns 3 and there is the IEP, we are still looking at those same requirements through the IFSP as being best practice for working with young children and families. But it would not be part of that infant development program or CD program management when we look at the case reviews and the findings. It wouldn't be part of that. We will still be doing those quality assurances, and we have all of the quality improvement activities and assurances we need to put in the waiver. That will still be going on, but it's just not going to be part of those Part C findings piece.
Okay.
That makes sense?
Yes, thank you.
Okay.
Hi, Deb. This is Vicki. I have a question. When it comes to when you're looking for determination at 4-9, you said for to see if they will qualify for the DD. Are they still having the same benefits of having Medicaid go to the redetermination date as some children do at the age of 3 now?
Yeah,
or will Medicaid just automatically stop on the day before their 5th birthday?
The continuing eligibility and for the families that would impact as far as having that it may continue until the next redetermination point. That's not tied to DD in specific or to our redetermination of eligibility. That's there. So quick answer is yes, because it's not tied to just at 2-9. It's also, it could be a child that where the family just decides that we need different services. We're gone a lot. We can't keep up with the schedule. We want to do it a different way. They could stop receiving a waiver service, still continue to be eligible for DD program management, and that could happen at any age, and that continuing eligibility would still kick in.
Okay. And my next question is, I know I kind of talked about this before, but if you're, the child is going to be having an IFSP and an IEP at the same time, is that right? There'll be two separate documents, or?
Yes, they will be two separate documents, but we will be working with the IEP team, the parent, the program manager, the family can invite both from the IEP team to the IFSP team or the other way around. We're going to try to have as much coordination there as possible so we don't end up going in different directions. I mean, we want it to be parallel approaches. The IEP will have a different focus than the IFSP, but we want to see that coordinated.
Okay, so they'll still be receiving a case manager for the IEP as well then, right, in the school system?
Yeah, that's going to continue to operate like it is, just like the IFSP or the waiver plan will. We just need to work on that coordination.
Okay.
And hopefully we can share some staff development information. One of the things that I forgot to mention regarding that Autism Pro software, in addition to saying here's some options to look at and some of the pros and cons, it also provides modules in there for the intervention coordinator to use in working with the family, the child care provider, or that in-home support staff as far as some good training so that there's consistent implementation of the selected approaches within that IFS. Hopefully we can share some of those issues back and forth with the school life.
And my last one, was there a limit on the in-home supports?
In-home support, that's an average of 150 hours per month over a quarter.
Okay, thank you. I probably missed that.
Because this is a waiver service and we are saying like a waiver is just, it's a deal. It's an agreement between a state and the federal government to say we will assure that the children that would have qualified for institutional support through an intermediate care facility, that instead of putting children in that restrictive setting, children that would qualify for that, we're going to support them in a family setting. We're going to support the routine, support community involvement. So they need to meet that same level of care, but they also need to receive that waiver service monthly. So if something happens and a child, I don't know, there's some other medical issues going on and maybe there's a surgery and they're out of state and they're not getting a waiver service that month because we can't provide a waiver service if the child is hospitalized. If it is not foreseen that the child, if it's not expected that the child would be getting a waiver service within that next quarter, we are going to have to what's called de-screen that child, and that's where we notify the county that the family's no longer getting that waiver service. So we do have to keep looking at, is there a monthly waiver service, just like we do with our other current waivers.
Okay.
Hi, this is Eric. I had a question about how to get on the program. You mentioned that anyone on the ASD scale would qualify. If a pediatrician would only suspect but didn't want to fully diagnose the child on, like, a POS, NOS, could the EDT give a second opinion on that then?
Well, it's coming out. There's one team, and there will be one diagnosis there. And we're not talking, it's not the family's pediatrician that they're dealing with. It will be Dr. Kwanru through the Ann Carlson Center, I believe, is the pediatrician that is currently contracted through there. They are looking for others across the state. We're trying to get more folks trained with this, but there will be one diagnosis from that team.
Thank you.
Does that answer your question?
Yes, thank you.
Does anybody have any more questions for Deb?
I can add that that evaluation application, we just completed that. I know a program manager was using it for the first time today with the family, and we're just, I think they're catching some of my spacing errors and stuff in there because that was done very quickly. We received 2 days' notice from CMS that the waiver was being approved and we could start delivering services. Well, we couldn't enter into a contract for the evaluation team until we had an approved waiver. So November's been very hectic for us in that route. But that information will be posted on the North Dakota Early Intervention website. And I don't know if that's listed through the Family Voices newsletter or not.
I don't think it is, Deb. Well, not, it's on the website, but it's not on the newsletter, but we can sure add it.
Yeah. And it's ndearlyintervention.org, or you can go through the Department of Human Services website, go to Developmental Disabilities, and then through there you can just click to Early Intervention, and that will get you to that site. Application packet, that should be up there either Friday or Monday.
And Deb, just for clarification, because we do have the ND Early Intervention website under Early Intervention on our e-news that goes out, but
okay,
that will be the same site for the autism waiver is what you're saying?
Yes. Even though
okay,
it's dealing with some of those 3 and 4 year olds, we're still putting
okay,
it on that site because it does cover that population also.
Yeah, and what I'll do is I'll watch for it, and as soon as that autism waiver sets up, we'll put it up kind of as a headline on our show.
Okay, great.
All right.
We are trying to get the word out to families that are on DD program management right now that may be interested in this waiver. We're also looking at maybe it was a child we did redetermination on at 2-9, and they weren't eligible, but they are on the spectrum. They're less than 5 years of age, or it's suspected they might be on the spectrum. We're trying to get the word to those families. But we really are depending on our child find partners out there, be it the preschool teachers, the medical community, the family support organizations. We're putting out news releases, but we can't guarantee that they're going to be picked up or that folks are going to find that, but we're just going to try to keep getting the word out there as much as we can.
Deb, the other thing, too, that I'm going to throw out there is we're going to be putting out our newsletter soon. So if you want a brief little article in there about that, I'd be happy to put that in.
Okay. Yeah, that will help. Any way we can get the word out, that will help. I can say we have one other regional meeting scheduled at this point. I'm still waiting to schedule a few more. But there will be a meeting in Jamestown next Tuesday. And I don't have a calendar in front of me, but I believe it's the 7th. And that will be at the South Central Human Service Center in room 124 at 7 p.m.
Deb, this is Paula in Minot. Have you shared this information with the medical home teams throughout the regions?
No, we haven't shared there.
Okay. I'll take care of that, contacting NDCPD, and they can contact the medical home teams with the flyer that was sent to us. Thank you.
Yeah, and if we can work through the division, too, with that, because we do have to have folks contacting the Human Service Center to get started with that.
Okay.
They can't go directly to that evaluation.
Right.
We will be scheduling an in-person meeting in the Williston region. Those dates haven't been finalized yet. And from Dickinson, Minot, and Devil's Lake, we'll also be having informational meetings for families and other stakeholders. That's probably going to be by a video. We're just running out of time to get to every region for evening meetings, so we'll have a group there, and I'll probably be connecting in by video from someplace else. Any other questions at this point?
If there's no other questions for Deb, we'll probably close this session. But, Deb, thank you so much again for providing some great information.
Yeah, thank you
for families
that.
And providers, and hopefully we can get the word out and get you full.
Okay.
So, thank you again.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you very much, Deb.
Bye.
The leader has disconnected. The conference will now end.